Our lesson will be coming from John chapter 21. John chapter 21, for the green opportunity to turn there if you have a paper Bible. And the subject of our lesson is going to be restoration and commission. Seven life lessons from the risen Christ. In other words, we're going to, as we explore John chapter 21, we're going to look at seven life lessons that Jesus taught after his resurrection. In the final chapter of John, chapter 21, Jesus reveals himself to his disciples again. If you recall, Jesus had revealed himself to them twice before after he had been resurrected. And so here it is. For those of you that are keeping track, we're going to go ahead and present life lesson number one. Life lesson number one is this, and I want you to take it to heart, that Jesus provides even in doubt. Let me say that again. Jesus provides even in doubt. Why is that significant? Because if Jesus says he's going to do something, he's going to do it even if you're struggling to believe him. Why? Because he's not a man that he should lie. If Jesus says he's going to do it, he's going to do it. We're going to be reading verses, John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. I'll be reading a New American Standard version. And I will tell you, just for rules of engagement, in the military we call them ROEs. If you have something to say, simply just raise your hand. We'll identify you, and then we ask that you use a microphone, simply because not only do we want the people inside the sanctuary to hear and partake, but we may have some people that are online, or and we want them to hear what's being discussed. So again, I'm reading from John chapter 21, verses 1 through 3, the New American Standard Version. Here we go. After these things, Jesus manifested himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And he manifested himself in this way. Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus and Nathan of Cana in Galilee and the sons of Zebedee and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. They said to him, we will also come with you. They went out into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. So in verse 1, we see that John is giving us the description of what's happening here. He says the disciples were by the Sea of Tiberias, which is another name for the Sea of Galilee. There were seven disciples there, but he only names five. He says Simon Peter, one, Thomas, two, Nathanael, three, and Zebedee's sons, which we know to be James and John, and two others. So Peter here, they're fishing, they're there together, and Peter says, I'm going fishing. Right? Peter makes a statement. I'm going fishing. What would make Peter go fishing? Well, Jesus is gone, and Peter has a family to support. Not only does he have a family to support, he's still reeling from the fact that he has denied Jesus. The other disciples, when they hear that Peter is going fishing, they join him for an all-night fishing expedition, right? Is that what your Bible says? All night, they go on a fishing. I mean, all night, they go fishing, right? But what? They caught nothing. Wow. So all night, they've been fishing, but they caught nothing. What we see here is when Jesus was gone, Peter returns to his old line of work. He said, okay, Jesus is gone. I got to go do something. I'm going to go back and do what I do best. I am a fisherman. But he catches. Jesus is teaching us something. We see that, hey, even though he goes back to what he used to do, he is now unsuccessful. In verse 4 through 6, we see the revelation or the reveal. Because remember, I told you that Jesus reveals himself to the disciple. Verses 4 through 6. But when the day was now breaking, another word coming, Jesus stood on the beach. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. So Jesus said to them, children, you do not have any fish, do you? They've been fishing. Jesus is on the shore. He looks out and he sees and he makes a statement. He's not asking. He's telling them, you don't have any fish, do you? And they answered and they said, no. And he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find the catch. And then they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. See, Jesus tells them, you don't have fish. But what I want you to do, he tells them, Sister Latham, is I want you to do it again. I know you've been up all night long, but now I'm here. See, that's what you got to understand. When Jesus is involved, things happen. Y'all, let me look over here. When Jesus is involved in what you're doing, things happen. So Jesus said, cash it, mother. He said, cash it. And when they do it this time, they get so many fish they can't handle it. Why is this miracle significant? Question? Well, if you remember, this is a repeat. Oh, y'all don't remember that, do you? Back in Luke 5 and 11, these boys, Peter and all these other disciples, they was out there fishing. They had never met Jesus before. Jesus is out there, Pam. He's teaching, right? He's by the sea. He's teaching, and these fishermen come, and they say, he looks at them, and they say, hey, we've been fishing. Jesus said, hey, do it again. But this time, they argue with him. Y'all don't remember the story, do you? Jesus said, hey, listen, do it again. They said, listen, we fishermen. We got this, Adrian. Listen, this is what I do, Jesus. I know what I'm doing. I'm a fisherman. I've been here all night. I didn't catch nothing. That means there's no fish to be caught. See, sometimes we do that even in our own lives, Jonell. Jesus tells us to do something, and we say, hey, Jesus, hold up, hold up, hold up. I got this one. And what happens is when we don't follow his instructions, we don't get the provisions that he's trying to pour into our lives. These boys had been there before. Here's a life lesson. Life lesson number one. Jesus provides even in doubt. Wow, that's powerful. As we have stated, Peter had been a fisherman all his life. Nevertheless, he failed without Jesus' enablement. Here's what we need to understand. Jesus is reminding Peter that he is not ultimately self-sufficient, but entirely dependent on God. Even to accomplish work that he had been doing his whole life. Why is that significant to you, Finley? Why is that significant to you, Brother Willie? It's because this. Jesus has said it, and he has declared it, as he told his disciples way back in John 15 and 5, you can do nothing without me. Listen, you need to get it in your sanctified mind, Pam, that you can't do nothing without Jesus. You can't do nothing, Mother Liza, without Jesus. The impact here. Trust in Jesus' guidance. Let me say that again. Trust in Jesus' guidance, especially, somebody say especially. Especially when we are unsure. See, sometimes you're going to get unsure of some things in your life, Pam. And so what you need to do is just say, okay, I'm unsure, so I'm just going to latch in and trust to what Jesus has taught me. Yeah, sometimes it looks like we're being unsuccessful. Something's not being successful, Philip, but I need you to just trust in what Jesus has taught you. And you will understand that Jesus can provide abundantly. Somebody say abundantly. Even when our efforts seem fruitless, even when what we're doing look like it's not working out, Jesus can provide abundantly. In those, when he told them to catch the net, they didn't catch two fish. They didn't catch three. They caught 153. It wasn't but seven disciples. Why you need so much fish? Why? Because Jesus blesses abundantly. Life lesson number two. Recognizing Jesus' presence. Verse 7 and 8. Listen, hear me clearly. I know I'm going fast, so let me slow down. Anybody had any questions, comments? I get excited and I get to rolling. But I do want, so no question. Verse 7. It is imperative that you learn to recognize Jesus' presence. Let me talk to these people over here, because y'all look like y'all some bona fide believing Christmas. You got to recognize Jesus' presence. You look like you want them sanctified Christmas. You need to recognize Jesus' presence. You need to know when Jesus is working. Oh, y'all didn't catch me. See, Jesus is always working. You just got to know how to recognize it. And let me, I'm getting ahead of myself, Pam. Sometimes Jesus is working even in our routine things. And so you got to recognize his presence, right? You got to recognize when Jesus is working. So verse 7 and 8. Therefore, that disciple... He says, that disciple whom Jesus loved. Let me stop there. That disciple who Jesus loved. Anybody know who that was? I heard AD says John. That's right. We're going to get there. That disciple that Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. What? Look at what happened. So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, we're in verse 7, he put his outer garment on, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. Verse 8, but the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from land, but about 100 yards away, dragging the net full of what? Full of fish. Watch this. This miraculous catch of fish opened the eyes of John, the disciple whom Jesus loved. John said, hey, wait a minute. I've seen this before. And when I saw it before, only one person could do what I just saw. See, Brother Jeffrey, sometimes you got to understand there's certain things that only Jesus can do. So he said, hey, it is the Lord. And you know old Peter, man. A lot of times when we come to Jesus, we don't lose the traits that we have, right? Y'all know that, right? He makes them for our good. But some of the traits we got, we still keep them. Y'all remember Peter, right? Peter, one of them guys, he don't never think. Y'all don't remember that story, do you? When the boy said something to Jesus, what did Peter do without thinking? Cut off his ear. Jesus, wait, hold, slow your roll, Peter. And got the man ear, had to put it back on, because Peter, he don't think, he just moved. So when John said it is the Lord, Peter just put on his stuff and jumped in the water. Stroking. That's a good thing he could swim. Well, here's what I'm saying. And so you got to recognize Jesus' presence. The other disciples came along in the boat and they were dragging the net full of fish. The disciple who Jesus loved. We're talking about a lesson here. That indicates a special relationship. That to me, when you hear that term, Kent, indicates to me an intimate relationship. That to me, Pam, indicates inner circle. Y'all don't hear me, right? See, you can be a disciple, or you can be a disciple that's on the inner circle. Y'all didn't catch that, did you? I believe, Pam, it's dependent on you. I believe it's dependent on where we are in the relationship with Jesus is purely predicated on what we want it to be. That's why you see some Christians, you be like, man, that boy, true story, right? I got a friend that's my same age, and I went to Tuscaloosa. He's a pastor of a church, and he balling out as a pastor, right? But before he started balling out as a pastor, we was at a family reunion. So I went to my mom, because my mom is wise. The matriarch, I mean, she dripping. She, I mean, man, I'm telling you, she loves the Lord. I mean, you wake up, she on the porch reading the Bible. You go to bed, she. So I said, hey, Mom. Because I know, you know, I'm thinking she know all things. Not all like Jesus, but I said, you know, Anderson and I, we're about the same age. But when I come in his presence, it looked like he just, it just looked like he's just anointing that's falling all off of him. You know what she said? She said, boy, that boy stay in the word. What? It was like a knife, Finley. The reason he like that, because he stayed in the word. What she was saying, and if she didn't know it, was, hey, oh, you need to pick up your game. In other words, if you want that special relationship, you got to rise to another level. Because I was just skipping, you know, reading every, you know, hitting and miss like some Christians do. You know, they only got a relationship with Jesus on Sunday. Or they may have that relationship with Jesus on Wednesday. But if you want to be in that special relationship, you got to talk to him Monday through Sunday. Oh, go, Philip, correct me. Sunday through Sunday. Amen. I'm just saying, I mean, it's up to you. It's purely up to you and I. It's truly up to you and I. Impact of this teaching. Here's the key. You need to be attentive to recognize Jesus' presence and intervention in our lives, especially during times of doubt or routine activity. Any questions? That's life lesson number two. Somebody said life lesson number three. Life lesson number three is this. Jesus always has an open invitation for fellowship with him. Oh, y'all better catch that, right? He always have an open invitation. See, it ain't never too early to fellowship with Jesus. It ain't never too late to fellowship with Jesus. You'll never inconvenience Jesus. See, can we be real? We human, right? Sometimes I don't want to fellowship. I know I'm just the only one. Sometimes, sister, I don't want to be bothered. Sometimes you might want to fellowship with me, Chief, and I might want to watch the Paris Olympics. Yeah, and so I might have to put you on hold. But Jesus, he always got an open invitation. You can call him anytime, day or night. You got to write that down. You got to apply it. Hey, Pam, you ain't got to say, well, man, hey, listen, I need to talk to Jesus, but I got to wait till 6 o'clock tomorrow. Nah. Just call him up. Call him up. They used to have that song, call him up. You know I can't sing, right? So I ain't going to even try. Here's what he said. So watch this. John 21, 9 through 11. So when they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid and fish placed on it and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish which you have now caught. Simon Peter went up and threw the net to land full of large fish, 153. There were so many, the net was not torn. Look at this. When they arrived on the beach, they saw that Jesus had cooked a breakfast of fish and bread. Listen, they come up on shore. They've been fishing all night long. Caught nothing until Jesus told them to catch, throw it again. They get on shore, Jesus already cooking it up. Fried fish. Oh, you know I love me some fried fish. Oh, and then he said some bread. That sounds like a fish sandwich to me, y'all. Yahoo! That sounds like one of them golden corral. Eat all you want. Yeah, he is fired up. The Greek word for charcoal fire, though, appears two times in the John's gospel, here and in verse 18, Luke chapter 18 and 8. Do you know what happened in Luke 18 and 18? Peter was at another fire. See, Jesus has a way of reminding us of what we've done and what we said, right? Especially when we say some stuff and don't fulfill what we told him. That time, Sister Latham, John 18, 18, Peter's sitting here and he's telling Jesus how devoted he is. Right? He's telling Jesus, hey, listen, all these other dudes because Jesus told him, hey, listen, at some point, y'all gonna fall away. Peace, what? Not me. Them other dudes may fall away, but I'm here. I'm going to be with you thick and thin. I'm ride or die. Right? That's what he said. Oh, man. How many know that actions speak louder than words? A lot of folk talk a good game, Chief. But then when the pressure comes, we see what you're really made of. Right? And so Jesus is reminding Peter of his recent past. Because of that fire, Peter had denied him how many times? Three. Not one, not two, but three times. How can we be certain that Jesus is reminding Peter of his recent past? Well, when we get down to verses 15 through 19, we'll see Jesus reiterates this, right? But here's what I want us to understand. Peter never forgot this meal right here, right? When Jesus provides this meal, he never forgets it. How do I know this? Because in Acts 10, he's going to preach about it. And so again, we see that. John 21:12-14. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples ventured to question him. Who are you? Knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and the fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus was manifested to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So this is the third time in John 21. Jesus invited them to join breakfast. John tells us the disciples didn't ask, who are you? They didn't have to ask who you are now because they recognized who he was. Why? Because this was the third time he appeared to them after he died. The first time he appeared was in John 20:19-23, if you're taking note. The second was in John 20:24-29. Here's what I want you to understand. And you got to lay claim on this because if you haven't done so, you may run into this eventually. But I want you to know that the resurrection of Jesus Christ is neither a fairy tale or a hallucination. You got to have that in your mind. Because when you're out there sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ, some people are going to try to act like that was a fairy tale. But here's Jesus is going to show us it wasn't a fairy tale because he does it three times. He makes sure that they know it's him. He presented himself alive to them by many convincing proofs over a period of 40 days. Acts 1 and 3. And furthermore, Jesus made sure that they knew it was him. He said, hey, listen. I ain't a ghost. This ain't a hallucination. I want you to touch me. Touch me. See, cause, you know, I ain't never seen no ghost, but I believe they do exist. And demand, you know, I ain't never touched one, right? But I'm told you can't, if you touch them, they're just a spirit. Jesus saying, touch me because he want them to know that, hey, I'm real. Jesus was in his glorified body. He wants you to know, hey, this is me. That's the discussion you have to have when you talk to people. You got to let them know that Jesus is real. He is real. Lesson. Jesus invites the disciples to have breakfast with him. He provides bread and fish. Here's the impact of that teaching. Jesus desires fellowship with us. He meets us in our everyday need and invites us to share his presence. Watch this. They've been up all night long. They had a need. They were hungry, right? Jesus gives them what they need. Breakfast. That's just one part of the story, but you got to understand that he does that in all of our lives, in all of our situations. He meets us at our point of need. All you got to do is realize his presence. He's there when you need him. He's there, but you got to be willing or knowledgeable enough to recognize his presence. Life lesson number 4, restoration and forgiveness. Let me say that again. Restoration and forgiveness. We'll be reading verses 15 through 17. Jesus is always willing to restore and forgive. Y'all didn't catch that, did you? Jesus is always willing to restore and forgive. Perhaps we as Christians can learn a little bit from that. Jesus is always willing to restore and forgive. How do we know this? Well, let's get into the meat of the potatoes. John 21:15. So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, right? So he's talking, 15. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, Peter said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. So let's break this down. After breakfast, Jesus has a one-on-one talk with Simon Peter. He asked him, Simon, do you love me more than these? Why is he saying more than these? In other words, he's asking him, do you love me more than the other disciples? Why would Jesus ask him that? Well, Jesus is giving him a reminder of what he said. Jesus is reminding him of what he said. Because if we go back, remember I said, Peter was saying, hey, I love you more than them other guys, and if they fall away, I'm here. So now he asks me, do you love me more than them? Right? Peter wanted to Jesus. See, Peter had vowed, and I'm just going to read what he said in verse, and it's, if you can, for those taking notes, it's in Matthew 26:31. Peter had vowed this, if everyone falls away because of you, these are Peter's words, I will never fall away. I will never. How many of you know you may not want to say never? I will never fall away. Peter had wanted Jesus to know that through the devotion of the other disciples might waver, he could count on Peter remaining steadfast. He would be the one disciple. The one that Jesus could trust. Jesus, all them other guys you can't trust. I'm the one you can truly trust. But here, after Peter has shamefully denied Jesus 3 times, Jesus basically asked Peter, are you still the most committed disciple? Peter answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Now here's the thing, and one of the things that I would tell you, if you have a little bit of change in your pocket, one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best things you could buy is, you know, get you either, you know, computer software or a book, which has the Greek and the English versions, right? Because what happens sometimes, Jonelle, is when they translate stuff, They translate it not entirely the way it's supposed to mean. That's why now people are so confused, because when you hear the word love in the English word, it's just one word. But when you break it down into Greek, it has different meanings. So and here Jesus is, I'm going to show you what he's really asking, right? So here's it. When Jesus asked Peter if he loved him, Jesus uses the word agapo, the Greek version agapo, which is often to you to describe self-sacrificial love. Agapo, we've heard of agape, that is the highest form of love, right? And so, but when Peter responds to Jesus, he doesn't use that type of love. He uses the word, or the Greek word, philia. So Jesus is talking agape. Peter is talking philia. Y'all know what philia is, right? That friendly love, that brotherly love. How many of you know, folk fall in and out of friendships? Y'all better catch that. How many of y'all have some friends that no longer... Yeah. We ain't gonna meddle. I'm just saying. So Jesus is using, or Peter is using, philia, a love between good friends. Previously, as I stated before, Peter had claimed that his love for and commitment to Jesus was superior to the others. But after his failure and denial, he wasn't willingly so arrogant anymore. How do you know when you fail, it sometimes has a way of bringing you back to your senses? See, sometimes we can be arrogant, right? We know it all. We can do it all. Then all of a sudden we experience failure. And we realize we ain't all in a bag of chips. Peter thought he was the man. He didn't realize that Jesus knew him better than he knew himself. How many of you know that Jesus' mother knows you better than you know yourself? He knows all of us better than we know ourselves, right? So Jesus told him, okay, if you ain't going to have sacrificial love, just feed my lambs. Since you're not thinking so highly of yourself anymore, I can use you. Y'all ain't catch that, right? Now that you've humbled yourself, I can use you. Now that you've humbled yourself, I can use you. See, Jesus can only use us if we're humble. Because when you're humble, you're willing to follow instructions. You're open to feedback when you're humble. Verse 21:16-17. He said to him, again a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, shepherd my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? He said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. Second time he asked Peter, Jesus was still using agape. Peter was still using philia. The third time, Jesus drops down to his level. He says, listen, Jesus used the verb philia, the same one that Peter's been using. And then he tells him, tend my sheep. So the question is, why does Jesus ask him three times? Y'all know the answer to that, right? He was simply mirroring his denials. You deny me three times, I'm going to question your love three times. Here's the piece, and here's the thing that I think we can, a life lesson that we can definitely learn is this. Jesus offers restoration and forgiveness no matter our past failures. Wow, that's key. There's nothing you've done in your life. And I, you know, I ain't going to tell you mine because you might look at me sideways. Because I know I was low down, dirty scum. I'm going to be real with you. I was, man, sometimes I think about what Jesus brought from me and I start crying all over again. That just let me know how much he loved me. You can love this guy. You can restore me and forgive me for what I did. If he can do that, man, ain't too much you can do to me that I can't be willing to forgive you. See, you got to take Jesus' lessons and apply them to your life. That's why we as Christians, we got to look at this and say, okay, if Jesus did it, maybe I should be willing to restore some folk. Maybe I should be willing to forgive some folk that did me wrong. Peter denied Jesus 3 times. Not one. He didn't do him dirty 1 time, A.D. He didn't do him dirty 2 times. You know, he did him dirty 3 times. After all that Jesus had did for him. That's what makes it so bad. Jesus had did so much for Peter, and then he denied him 3 times. Yet Jesus, because of his love, said, we're going to put all that in the past. I'm going to restore you. I'm going to forgive you. Again, we're talking about life lessons, right? Life lesson. Life lessons. Life lessons. Lesson, life lesson number 5. We're going to get out here early tonight. Jesus is sovereign over all believers' lives. Y'all know what sovereign means, right? See, this is what helps me through all I go through. You know, for a lot of you know that I just lost my dad, right? Right? And as I was watching everybody else, even my granddaughter, she said, Dad, she asked my wife, she said, how come Papa ain't acting like everybody else? No, because they were losing it. And I don't say that in a negative way. You know, people grieve differently. Right? But here's what I know. Nothing. I know that God is sovereign. Nothing happens in a believer's life unless he instructs it or he allows it. Once you put that into your membrane, it's hard to... it gives you a peace that surpasses all understanding, wouldn't it? This happened. Pops was sold out for the Lord. This dude was sold out. Everything gonna be all right. This is in God's perfect will. And so again, we're talking about God is in control of the believer's life. Verses 18 and 19, it says, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to gird yourself and walk wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will gird you and bring you where you do not wish to go. Verse 19. Now this he said, signifying by what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. All right, so here's what Jesus is saying. He says, after Peter's restoration, Jesus prophesied about Peter's future. Right? So I'm telling you, he told him what he did when he was old, young. Then he tells him what's going to happen in the future when you get old, right? When you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will tie you and carry you where you don't want to go. In other words, he's telling you this is going to happen. Here's what John is doing. He's explaining prophecy about Peter. He's telling Peter that Peter would die He's going to die, but his death going to glorify his death and his life going to glorify God, right? If you remember, according to tradition passed down from the early church, Peter was martyred or killed, right? In Rome under Emperor Nero for his faith in Jesus Christ. Tradition said he was crucified upside down. But in spite of what, guess what's this? In spite of what Jesus telling, y'all got to catch this, because I'm trying to tell you Jesus is a sovereign. He says, so he said, hey, Peter, you're going to be crucified upside down. You're going to die a martyr's death. He's telling them this. That's going to happen in the future, but he's telling them now. But guess what he says? Follow me. Y'all didn't catch it, did you? Jesus is sitting here telling me, boy, they gonna put you upside down, hang you, now, all of that, but I'm still telling you, you need to follow me. Wow. Man. I sure hope God keep mine a secret, Chief. No, I'm just. But he tells him to follow me. Why? Because God is in control. Nothing happens without his say-so. He knows what he's doing, right? Jesus' lesson, here it is. Jesus predicts Peter's martyrdom, highlighting the fact that Peter's life and death would glorify him. Here's the key. Impact teaching. Our lives are in Jesus' hands. Do you believe that? Finley, do you believe that your life is in Jesus' hands? Jeff, you believe it? Beth, you believe it? Your life is in Jesus' hands. He has a plan and purpose for us. He has a plan for you, sis. He has a plan for you, sis. He has a plan for me. He has a plan for all of us. Even in suffering and sacrifice, we are called to trust him and follow him. Even in suffering, we are called to trust and follow his lead. Life lesson number 6. The personal journey to follow Jesus. How many say, can I get somebody to say it's personal? Yeah, it's personal. It's personal. Your relationship with Jesus is private and personal. Finley, Jonell, you and Finley, y'all got to know that, right? Your relationship with Jesus is private and personal. Your relationship, that's your daughter, right? Is that your daughter? Your friend? Huh? Okay. Even though y'all are close, your relationship with Jesus is private and personal. Why is that significant? So, okay, let's look at it. Because your relationship with Jesus is not connected or predicated on what somebody else is doing. Watch this. Verse 20, we're verse 20, I'm reading verses 20 through 22, right? So Jesus had just told Peter to follow me, right? So Peter is following him, right? So in verse 20, we see Peter is following Jesus, but then he turns around and looks. And he sees somebody else's follower. So he asked him a question. He says, Peter turned around, saw the disciple who Jesus loved following him. Peter said, I'm following him. He turned around, he sees John, he's following. Whom Jesus loved following, the one who also leaned back on his bosom at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? In other words, he's reflecting now. He's talking about, hey, John was the one who laid on Jesus' back when Jesus said, somebody's going to betray you. And he asked him, who gonna be the one? Jesus, you know. So Peter, seeing this, said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? In other words, Jesus said, Peter said, I'm following you. I look at this guy. Lord, what's up with him? Watch this. Jesus said to him, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. So let's talk in today's culture. Peter turned around. He saw John, the disciple of Jesus. He asked him, what about him? See, Peter had already accepted. Now remember, you got to follow this. Peter had already accepted the fact that he was going to die, right? Because Jesus already told him that. You're going to die. So Peter wants to, once he sees, he knows he's going to die, he sees the other guy following him. He says, hey, what about him? What's going to happen to him? If I'm going to die, what's going to happen to John? Right? Jesus says, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? Follow me. It's in essence Jesus saying, that's none of your business. Wow. Yeah, it's personal, right? What I got in store for him, Latham, it ain't your business. What I'm gonna do in Jeff's life and Kent's life and Willie's life got nothing to do with you. You just follow me. I'll pull out what I want in your life, but don't you worry about what's gonna happen in their life. It's personal. Go ahead, Jeff.
Question for you. Personal, you said a relationship with God, with Jesus is personal and private, right? Mm-hmm. So why is it that we testify? Why is it that we, quote unquote, brag on God and the goodness of him? Why is it that we, when we share his goodness, I mean, his goodness and all that stuff as a whole. No. If our relationship is personal and private, because it's
No. You get into life lesson number 7.
Okay.
Yeah, life lesson number 7 coming. Yeah, but that's a good question. When I say private and personal, I ain't talking about telling of his goodness and his mercy and his grace. I'm just talking about what Jesus has in plan for me. Because a lot of times we'll be sitting there, okay, we're trying to measure ourselves against the other guy. Okay. This ain't no competition. If you do what Jesus tell you to do, Janelle, you successful. Finley, you do what he tell you to do, it's successful. That's what I'm talking about. Because sometimes people are looking at what Jesus is doing in other people's lives, and they want to know what's happening, right? But you're absolutely right. I'm going to get there. That's life lesson number 7. Right? See, here's what I want to point out. God has a general will. Y'all heard the word general will, right? For his people. This is expressed in biblical commands for all followers to follow. But he also has a specific will. General will for everybody, but he has a specific will for Latham. It's only for Latham. No, the general will, all of us are supposed to follow the commandments and all that, but there's some stuff that he wants to do in your life, Kent, that you ain't going to see in the book. He's going to talk to you. And that is personal and private, right? General will for everybody, specific will. We are, as Jeff said, we are called to follow Jesus corporately as a church, and personal as an individual. Each of us is to have a personal relationship with God through Jesus. We are to seek to discern how he wants us to serve him and glorify him. You are not to use God's specific will for you to measure anyone else. Y'all catch that, right? Nor are you to use it to judge anyone else. How God chooses to use other believers is between him and God. Jesus, impact teaching. Jesus calls all of us to follow him, focusing on our personal journey and calling rather than comparing ourselves to others. That's the key right there. We need to compare ourselves to others. Our primary focus should be on our relationship with him. Verse 23. Therefore, this saying went out among the brothers that the disciple John would not die yet. Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but only if I want him to remain until I come. What is that to you? See, what happened, and this is key, when Jesus didn't tell him, the boy started a rumor. See, Jesus said, hey, what I got planned for him is between me and him, but Peter go out there and start a rumor. He go tell other boys that John ain't gonna die. Jesus never said that. Right? That's how rumors get started. That's how rumors get started, kid. Folks, because you don't give them all the tea, they get out there and start running and making up their own. See, not only that, that's how people misquote the Bible. Right? This is in the Bible. Folk get out there and they just put stuff together and now they start telling stuff that ain't even in the. That's why, man, again, I tell you, you got to study yourself, because you'll be surprised on how much stuff you heard people tell you that ain't even in the. Yeah, I'm telling you, you right? Listen, man, I heard, hey, Chief, they sound so spiritual. But then when I go looking for it, I can't find it in the Bible. And so he starts a rumor, right? Life lesson number 7. The importance of testimony. See, I knew we were going to jump. Like, hey, wait a minute, man. Listen, you got to get this in our heart, because like he's saying, Jesus wants us to tell our testimonies. Listen, if Jesus has done something for you, he wants you to tell somebody what he's done. Why? Because if you tell him what he's done for you, it may encourage somebody. Somebody might be out there twinkling, oh man, you know, they waver, and you can tell them, hey, God did this for me. And it may encourage him, say, man, maybe he'll do it for me. So we're talking about the importance of testimony. John 24 and 25. This is a disciple, 24, who is what? Testifying to these things and wrote these things, and we know that this testimony is true. Verse 25. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, which if they were written in detail, I suppose that even the world itself would not contain the books that would be written. Wow. That's powerful. The disciple, the one Jesus loved, is the one who's testifying right now to these things. Now he's testifying and he wrote them down. The Gospel of John is based on eyewitness testimony. John ain't talking about something he heard. He's talking about something he's. Wow. He saw, right? Something he saw. But the gospel only contains a small sample. Somebody say small. Of what Jesus done. If every one of them was written down, the world couldn't have enough books. Wow. What John is telling us is, hey, I'm only giving you a video clip of the highlights of Jesus' life. Now, for those of you, you know, Chief, you, a lot of us who do sports, now we don't watch the whole thing. We just go get the video clip, right? And it gives us a synopsis of what happened. What he's telling us here, hey, I'm giving you a synopsis of what happened, but Jesus did a lot more than what written in this book. Why is that important? That is super important that we know that. See, God has determined that what he have in scripture and given to us is enough. You don't need to know everything. You just need to know what I gave you. That's all you need to operate on is what I gave you. Know this. Don't be trying to figure out all this other stuff. Just get intimately knowing this. If you know this, you're going to be all right. He said, you don't have to know everything, but you got to know that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Right? Here's the thing. Here's the last piece, and Jeff, you were right on it, man. Our testimonies. I want you to feel this one in your heart. About Jesus' work in our lives are crucial. Notice, you know crucial mean, right? Crucial, super important. Our testimonies about what Jesus has done in our lives is crucial. It's super important that you share when he gives you the option to share what he's done in your life. Why can you share? Why can you tell somebody what Jesus did? Because you are an eyewitness to what he did to you. Listen, I ain't gonna tell your story, but I can tell this one because I'm an eyewitness. I can tell you this because I saw it. Can you see many times Jesus did something in your life? You saw it. Now tell somebody. By doing this, we encourage others who may be wavering in their faith. Seven life lessons from the risen Savior. Apply them to your life, and we would be the better for it. Any questions? Any last minute questions? Any comments? All right. Well, let's give the Lord a hand clap of praise.